As the sun set on center court, Federer triumphs in a thriller. Novak Djokovic is through to yet another final. We have a Federer versus Djokovic as the Wimbledon final. But before we can preview that, we had a big, big match on center court last night, and that was Federer versus Nadal, the 48th meeting, and Roger Federer triumphing in that match. Prakash, your prediction was true. As usual, you can hear two great voices of the analysts who are doing the show today, Raj K and Prakash. Raj K joining us from a cafe. So, and Prakash, who is about to leave, but dedication is the key, and we are here for another episode, and you will be listening to this episode as a review and a preview. A review of the semi-final and a preview of the final. So guys, let's not waste a single second more and go to the semi-final and start with Fedel, because it's the most important topic and the key talking point. And we witnessed some records, we witnessed some long rallies, we witnessed everything. I think Prakash's message that I died 100 times in that last game, that one game where Federer could have been broken. So it was drama, high drama. Let's go straight to you, Raj K, and let's describe what you felt about that match.
Well, people call it a classic. I agree with you that it's dramatic, but I don't think it was necessarily a classic, and it wasn't half as good as the real classic 2008 final. But then again, that is to be expected, because both players are not as close to their peak as they were then. And for me, the match went along expected lines. And if you remember, I had predicted a Federer straight sets win. Possibly. And other than that inexplicable second set dip, which I'm sure we'll talk more about, it really was more or less a straight sets win, and Federer never looked like losing the match to me. If you remember, I messaged in the first set saying that Federer is going to win the tiebreak because he was serving so well. Nadal was serving so well. Serve is Federer's strength. It's never been Nadal's strength. So if you had to pick one of those guys who serve would go off, it had to be Nadal. And that's exactly what happened in the tiebreaker. So I'm not surprised either by the result or by the way it unfolded.
Absolutely. Prakash, let's talk more about that first set. And let's go to the tiebreak. I mean, Federer at level T, three mini breaks. He got three mini breaks back. And that's something very uncharacteristic of Federer against Nadal in the past. I mean, he's been able to do more of that after that 2017 Australian Open win. I mean, get back, not let the game slip. So let's talk more about that tiebreak. What did you feel about that tiebreak? And then we can move on to the second set, which was Nadal. But let's talk about the tiebreak more.
So first thing about the tiebreaks is Federer is the king of tiebreaks. He's played probably the most tiebreaks, or compared to the other big champions, right? He has played a whole lot of them. I think only Isner and Karlovic have played more tiebreaks. And his winning record in those is very high, quite high. Not only, I think, Arthur Ashe, I think, who has played much lesser tiebreaks, is like the closest, I think, if I remember right. So, in a tiebreak, you generally tend to back Federer. And this year, I think, going into the tiebreak, he was 14-3. And the other thing that was going in Federer's favor is Federer and Nadal played.
Can I just add something to the tiebreak statistic?
Yeah.
Particularly against Nadal on center court, Federer has a wonderful record in tiebreak. You
that
would remember the 2008 final, right?
Two intense tiebreaks, two must-win tiebreaks, and Federer came back and won them both.
And he won two tiebreaks in the 2006 final as well, after bageling Nadal in the first set. I think he lost one tiebreak there and then won the next two in tiebreaks. The thing was, he was 5 out of 6 coming to the tiebreak yesterday on center court.
Yep.
And that trend continued with Federer just not letting Nadal take control of the tiebreak, pulling him back a couple of times, and eventually Federer himself taking control of the tiebreak and closing it out at 4, I think, 7-4, I think, in the tiebreak.
7-4, yes. Correct. So all in all, the first set was the key. I mean, we were talking in the preview episode as well to the semi-final that whoever wins the first set has like 33% of the chances go up, you know, and 33% of chance of winning. But Vajke, you predicted a straight sets win. Nobody thought that that dip would happen. That dip which happened 6-1 to Nadal, that set kind of went by quickly. So take us through that second set.
Well, I mean, so the second set was a bit of a surprise to me. I think there was a game where Federer had chances to break and he did not break. Federer was broken first and then he had chances to break back, I think, and he did not do that. And then after that, I thought Federer was probably conserving his energy for the other sets because, a long match does not favor him. And he realized that probably his chances were not that high in this set. And to me, that also shows the amount of confidence that Federer has, you know, that he's okay with probably it being one set all. He's backing himself. And it's very rare to see that kind of confidence in a Federer-Nadal match.
Absolutely.
But you should also remember, in the end, this match turned out to be the most one-sided of all their matches at Wimbledon. Even if you think to 2006, as Prakash said, I think there were a couple of tie breaks. 2007 was a five-setter, 2008 was a five-setter. This was a four-setter name, but to me, it seems more and more like a straight-set match. Well, probably I have an incentive to say this because I predicted a straight-set match. But honestly, the second set was completely different from the other
sets.
And
the prediction was spot on. I mean, even if three or four sets, a win prediction was spot on, isn't it? I mean, you non-clay courts, 9-0 for Djokovic and 6-0 for Federer, 15-0 for Djokovic plus Federer. So the predictions came true, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So here's what I have to ask you: if Federer plays Ferrer, what do you expect? Federer is 16-0 against Ferrer, and if I say that Federer is going to beat Ferrer in straight sets, are you going to be surprised? No, right? And well, Nadal, Djokovic and Federer together are 15-0 against Nadal since 2013 US Open and 2014 Australian Open, respectively, in their last 15 matches. And to me, it's not a surprise at all that Federer is beating Nadal here. And that's why I was so confident that, it would be a straight set win. And well, in the end, it was the one more set win. So, very comfortable victory for Federer.
Yep. So, two sets down, one set all in the match. You win a set on tiebreak and then you lose a set 6-1. But the conservation of energy happened there. And then Federer came out of the blocks serving first in that third set. He had an advantage and then he broke Nadal. There are a couple of errors from the Spaniard and won that third set. Prakash, Federer himself spoken about the way he can, he prepares himself for such matches. I mean, his energy and the tactics that he brings in, because he's become more of tactical and he's become more of a guy who implements a lot of things now to get through these long matches. What do you think Federer did in that third and fourth set that sealed the deal for him?
I think the third and fourth, I think more than the physical thing, I guess, just it is very important that he recover from that 6-1. Because I am not usually a fan of tanking sets, or because I don't think momentum lost is... I feel it's a bigger trade-off than the energy gain. But in the past, a lot of players have done that. So I guess maybe that helped, in a sense. Federer just kind of started focusing on the third set, I guess. And the bigger thing was that he didn't... he started serving first in the third set, which is always, I feel, a huge advantage, when you play or in big matches and an important situation. So I think that helped him. And of course, the pressure was consistently on Nadal, and he broke him early on and just rode that to close it out.
Yeah.
And
so,
then,
okay, let me Let me quote the ultimate tennis analyst, Nick Kyrgios, on this topic. So after his,
we are adding the spice now. Yeah, Rajke, let me just spice it up.
So in the first round, Nick Kyrgios had a 5-set win, if you remember. And the fourth set of that was bagel or breadstick. It's either 6-1 or 6-0. And then, remember, the last set also was one-sided. So in the press conference, Kyrgios was asked, did you not really try very hard in the fourth set? And Kyrgios' reply was something like, did it work or not? And then the person who asked the question was a bit silent. And I think Kyrgios repeated it. Did it work or not? You know, let me ask you, Prakash. Did it work or not?
It looked like it worked, I guess. So we got to go with Kyrgios here and say, you know, it really worked. So,
but guys, yeah. and there's one more thing that I've received, and there's a small point of discussion. We've all gone about how the grass was slower. It didn't seem slower yesterday night. Take us through that. And also, Prakash, you were quite critical of the long rallies that were happening on grass. I mean, 26 shots, 25 shots, 23 shots. Federer winning the most of them.
That was a surprise that Federer won those. But I guess, again, now that's a new dynamic now with the... Since, you know, 2017, that Federer showed up his backhand. I would say he kind of traded that, like, you know, improved the topspin. But I think his slice is not as good as it used to be, which I think might kind of prove costly in the Sunday match because he needs a slice against Djokovic. But I think that's the trade-off when he made the switch to the racket. He wanted, you know, to improve his topspin and the flatter shots. And that showed up, you know, in a very surprising stat. I think Nadal won the more of the shorter rallies. I mean, just by like a little bit, maybe like one or two. But in the longer rallies, Federer had a very definitive say. And that proved very crucial. So, yeah, I mean, that's to me a proof of this. Grass is slow or fast, the rallies that are happening, those 25, 30 short rallies. I mean, of course, they used to happen, I'm sure, you know, even previously, but not at the frequency at which they happen these days. And definitely, I think this surface is playing slow, not just because of the grass, but because of the weather, you know. It's been pretty dry in England. So I think it's got cooler over the weekend, but still I think the dryness means that, you know, conditions are pretty slow.
Pretty slow, yeah. And we expect something like similar on Sunday. But Rajke, here's when you come in and, let's talk about the 5 match points in that last game, and everyone had their heart in mouth. Heart in mouth. And 5 match points. And Rajke, take us through that. Did you see Nadal breaking back there and tying the game and then the match going into 5 sets? And how Federer at 37 did that? I'm sure it didn't surprise you, but it surprised many who are first-time watchers. So take us through that last game, 5 match points saved and coming back to win it then from match points.
So let me address your point about Federer being 37. And I agree, 37 is perhaps above average age for a tennis player. But we should also remember that Nadal is 33, right? So like 5 years ago, Federer was 32 and Nadal was 28. Now Federer is 37, yes, but Nadal is 33. And movement is one of the biggest assets of Nadal, you know, the way he moves on all court. And you can clearly see that his movement is slowed down a bit, whereas that doesn't affect Federer that much because his game was... He also moves very well, but it's not that important for him as Nadal. I mean, he's got other big weapons like a serve, which is very effective on the grass. So it's debatable as to who has benefited as the years go by. For example, say 3 years down the line, this match happens. Federer is going to be 40, but Nadal is going to be 36, right? So are you going to tell me then that, you know, it's going to be more towards Nadal? No, I think as the years go by, Federer becomes, relatively speaking, stronger in this matchup. And what was your other question? Oh, yeah. Would Federer have lost it? No, there's no way he was losing this match after the first tiebreak. And remember, even the break points that Nadal had was just to get back at 5-all.
Yeah.
And what happens if it goes to 6-all? It's a tiebreak. And what's Federer's record against Nadal in tiebreaks? It's 5-1 at center.
Fair enough. That sums up everything. And that takes us now. And Federer then converting, Federer sealing the deal in the fourth set, winning the game, winning the match 7-6, 1-6, 6-3, 6-4. And that takes us to Sunday, where, you know, we were talking on the group that Djokovic is having a massage somewhere saying, bring it on Sunday. So what exactly does Federer face, the tall order at the center court of Wimbledon? Prakash, let's start with you.
Yeah, so it's going to be, it's a pretty, you know, funny situation, you can say. You know, Federer has got the historical advantage, being the possibly the, you know, greatest grass court player of all time.
Yeah,
having won Wimbledon 8 times, and with this terrific record. But the current form is with Djokovic, you know, who is the greatest, I think, grass court player of the decade right now, with 4 Wimbledon titles. Federer has 2, Murray has 2, and Nadal has 1 this decade. So you got to say, you know, the form is with Djokovic. Again, also for the last 1 year, he's been number 1 for the majority of it. And I think Federer goes as a distinct underdog, in spite of the terrific record he has. As you know, it is form over class basically right now. And as I mentioned, I think at the beginning of the tournament, or you know, even during the French Open, I wanted Federer to play Djokovic in a semi-final rather than a final, because you know, for Djokovic is going to be more dialed in a final, and Federer has lost 3 consecutive finals, Grand Slam finals to Djokovic.
Correct.
Starting with the 2014 Wimbledon, right? And the finals have gotten, or do you say, the 2014 was the closest final. 2015 Wimbledon was a little less.
Yeah.
2015 US Open, Federer actually squandered about 19 break points. He was like 4 of 23. One of the worst, I mean, even by Federer standards, right?
Yeah, and I very distinctly remember the 14 final where he came back, where the comeback was such. Right. He was trailing by 5 games. He won 5 games on the trot and sealed the deal in that set, and then kind of lost it in the final one. But Rajke, here's one question for you, and which Prakash has said, you know, is this from a tweet and that says, Federer can sometimes reach 11 on the scale of 1 to 10, but will also more rarely drop to 6.5. Nadal, like Djokovic, stays 9.5 much more regularly. So let's say Djokovic is at 9.5 consistently on Sunday. Where does that put Federer then? And how does Federer respond?
So I don't agree with the tweet for multiple reasons. It's too long to go into all the reasons, but let's just say that it's debatable whether it's 9.5 or 8.5. So I don't understand why you would put Nadal and Djokovic at 9.5. And I also don't understand why you would put these two players together, because Nadal on clay, I agree, is a great player. But off clay, he and Djokovic are completely different players. Mm-hmm. Now, what does Federer need to... I mean, first of all, let me agree with Prakash, you know, before I tell you what I think Federer needs to do. I think Djokovic is favorite here because of 4 reasons. One, that he holds 3 Grand Slams now, so he's in good form. Second, he's a good grass court player himself, having won 4, although of course Federer has won 8. And then third, he's beaten Federer in 3 finals, the Wimbledon 2, US Open 1, and also the Australian Open semi-final, which in fact I think was the last slam meeting. The fourth reason is that it's tough to beat, for any big three member to beat 2 of the other guys back to back. We've only seen it happen once in recent years, which is 2011 US Open, when Djokovic beat Federer and then Nadal in the final. So because of these 4 reasons, I think Djokovic is the favorite. But Federer is going to have better chance against Djokovic than Nadal had against Federer. So
yeah, absolutely. Go on.
Maybe 55-45 to Djokovic, or maybe 60-40 to Djokovic at best. So 40% is still a good chance, you know. 40% is like you draw random numbers from 0, to, you know, like 1 to 5, and it's a chance of getting an even number, you know. I mean, that's not that less, right? I mean, So yeah, I take those chances if I'm Federer. And I actually disagree with Prakash that it's better for Federer to beat Djokovic in the semifinal. I agree if you want to beat Djokovic, then that's true. But there are other things at play here, right? There's the GOAT race. There's a slam race, at least. GOAT is maybe an intangible concept, but there's a slam race, and Federer has to keep Nadal from winning slams as well to preserve his record, right? So that's already accomplished. He stopped Nadal from winning a slam, and this is extremely important, right? In some ways, it's like him winning a slam, because ultimately what matters is going to be probably the difference between him and Nadal, or maybe the difference between him and Djokovic if Djokovic overtakes Nadal. But at least he stopped Nadal from winning a slam. If we had played Djokovic in the semi and had won that and played Nadal in the final, well, we've seen this so many times before, right? That Djokovic and Federer had to play semis, and then the winner has to play Nadal. We saw it in 2010 US Open, 2011 US Open. I don't want that to happen again.
I'm very happy that
Djokovic... And in fact, I want Federer to somehow regain the number two ranking, so that at US Open, Federer and Djokovic are going to be in opposite halves and only meet in final and not in semifinal. I just would not want a Djokovic-Federer US Open semifinal.
Absolutely. So Prakash, I am going to ask you one question, and Rajke, I am going to ask you one question, and we are going to end this episode unless you guys can share some stats with us later. But let's get to the questions, Prakash. And the first question for you, and the first question regarding, you know, Federer's chances. Let me read that question out. Let's ask Rajke first. Let's ask Rajke. Rajke, please be here. Let's, Rajke, talk us through Djokovic's game, because there was a tweet saying, you know, that that you can win many cheap points on grass and hard court against Nadal on serve. And with Djokovic, every service game becomes tougher through the course of the match. And his depth, his solid defense and his precision makes it tougher. He chokes you to death through the five sets. So talk us through Djokovic's game.
So it's very interesting, you know, like to hear players talk about how it is like to play Federer and Djokovic. So Federer, for example, Morphy once said that, you know, playing Federer was so difficult because every shot is different. Federer hits every shot to you in a different way. In contrast, Goffin said after playing Djokovic that it's so difficult to play Djokovic because, in Goffin's own words, it's deep to the left and you run to the left and you pick it up. And again, it's deep to the right. And this is an underestimated aspect of Djokovic's game, his depth of shot, his precision. And he's such a wonderful returner that he can make your serve game look like a return game. And this is the biggest advantage in tennis, right? Your serve. And against Djokovic at times, well, this is not going to happen to Federer because he's such a wonderful server. But for a normal player, like, for example, Nadal, you see Nadal-Djokovic matches and Nadal is struggling to hold serve. He's struggling to hold serve like he's returning, you know. And that, mentally, that puts you in such an awkward position, because throughout your tennis career, you've grown up playing tennis, you think that when it's my serve, I have the advantage. Against Djokovic, that goes out of the window for a lot of players.
Neutralization,
But again, this is Federer. He's got a wonderful serve. If he's serving very well, it's going to be difficult even for Djokovic. And that's one of the best things that I saw against Nadal, that he was serving so well. Particularly against Djokovic, that becomes very, very important. So I'm very happy to play Federer. You know, and I expect a close match. This is not going to be like a Federer-Nadal match. These are the two greatest players of clay in this era. Easily above Nadal, of clay. And, you know, it's going to be a good match.
Very well put, Rajke. And Prakash, if you remember at the start of the Wimbledon, there was a fuss created regarding the seedings and the number two seed and the number three seed. Do you think that this match last night put the debate to bed? I mean, Federer justifying the number two seeding?
Oh, yeah, most definitely, you know. Definitely, there was an undercurrent of that, you know. I'm pretty sure everyone was aware of that, all the controversy ahead. And I think Federer justified, you know, the Wimbledon seeding. And I would say, as I said then, that, you know, other slams should do this too. And because I feel, you know, we had, too many, like, you know, the Federer-Djokovic semifinals in the US Open or Australian Open.
Yeah.
When, where they were the two best hardcourt players, that doesn't sound right.
Let me just put some numbers on it. You say too many. If you quantify it, it becomes even crazier. I think for 4 years straight at both Australian and US, something like that. So 8 times in a row, People were just so surprised to see this happening slam after slam, 8 or maybe even 10 times a row, right? Each time it's with half probability that they would be together, and this happened 10 times, which is 1 over 2 to the power 10. That's something like that is the probability of that happening. It was just stunning when both of them were at their peak. They kept being drawn to play each other in semis. Right. So many great Federer-Djokovic matches have in fact been semis and not finals, exactly because of this reason.
Absolutely.
True. That's very true.
Yeah, so any stats that you guys want to share?
Well, we've just been saying stats one after the other. Okay, let Prakash go first,
I just tweeted in response to a tweet that Rajke sent yesterday that about the Federer and Djokovic, having lost to Nadal since 2014 Australian Open.
Yeah.
That's 9 matches for Djokovic and 6. That's outside clear. 9 matches for Djokovic and 6 straight for Federer now. So I just tweeted saying that just the man, not the matches, right? Like even the sets. Federer had an 8-set winning streak coming into, yesterday or including the first set yesterday. And now he has won 10 of the last 11 sets. And Djokovic is double that. He's won 20 of the last 22 sets he played against.
I'm reading that. Correct.
On hard courts, it's even better for Djokovic. Yeah. I don't think he's lost a set for like 5 years or something. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the last set he lost was the US Open 2013.
Imagine that.
For 6 years. So actually, it's not like these guys haven't played. They've played like 7 or 8 times on hard courts.
So if you just think hard courts,
that's not won a set against Djokovic. Let that sink in.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you just include hard courts, right? Nadal has not won a set from Federer since the Australian Open 2017. So that means that's about what, 6 sets there, I think? 7 sets, including the last set there. And against Djokovic, since 2013 US Open, that's a total of, 15 sets lost in a row. On hard courts, Djokovic against Nadal. And these are the games that Nadal has won, no? In these 15 sets, I'll read them out. 3-4, 3-4, 3-3, 2-2, 3-3, 1-2. Before a tie break, 6. And then he lost 2. And then again, this Australian Open, which was 3-2-3.
Open was a complete massacre.
Everyone seeing that, experienced what Djokovic can do. And he did it to a Nadal who was in prime form, I'm sure. And a great episode, guys. Everyone excited. You remember me not messaging even once last night. 3.5 liters of water down and 20 blue breaks later. And that horror, that, one game, 5-4, 5 match points and heart in mouth moment. Federer sealed the deal and the videos are everywhere now. So just in case our viewers are tuning in, Simona Halep is on her way to winning the ladies singles title against Serena Williams. So that...
I had no idea about that. What's the score?
Yes, so Halep 6-2. Halep 6-2 first set and now faces... now is on course to a double break in the second. 5-2. 4-2 and could become 5-2. So it's a matter of time. It's a matter of time if she holds serve, she wins the championship.
If he doesn't get his double break...
Yeah.
It could be. You couldn't. Serena is never sure till the last ball. Especially at Wimbledon, it's littered with women's players who have had leads against Serena. She got the double break.
It's a big moment for Halep, so she might get a bit.
Exactly. So she got the insurance break.
Yeah.
Even that, I'm not entirely confident, but, I would give her a 50% chance of now closing the
season. Yeah, so she's serving for the match championship right now. She's serving for the championship.
Serena herself, now I think she has lost. This will be the third final in a row.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, she had only lost like 4 finals before that. Grand Slam finals. That's just...
Correct. And now losing 3 in a row. And So that one elusive slam is keeping her waiting to take the lead, right. Overall lead. So guys, well, thank you very much for joining in from your respective places, and that's been a fun episode. And Rajke, you're on fire. I hope you don't set that cafe on fire.
No. I mean, like, because it's like I'm very happy that for a change, based on some recent predictions, finally my predictions have come true. And we forgot to talk about Djokovic, a good match. I would like to remind you that I said that it would be a tough match for Djokovic. Prakashi has said it would be straight sets. I did predict tough match, and it was indeed tough match. Could have gone correct.
Prakash, and by the way, Prakash, we would love to be here for more and discuss the tweet that you sent, because that was sensational. Some digging in, and that's what we offer here on the Tennis Galaxy podcast. But we have a lot of time after the Wimbledon, which is Monday morning, Sunday night IST or Monday morning IST. And I hope you've loved our previous episodes, and do tune in for the next one. This one will be out as soon as possible right now. So until next time, until the Wimbledon final, men's Wimbledon final, here's your host Prasad signing out with Prakash and Rajke on the Tennis Galaxy podcast.